You're listening to episode 351 of Women Worldwide. How do you navigate those life-altering moments when you have to focus on the big stuff and not sweat the small stuff? My guest today has a lot to share on this topic, so stay tuned to learn more.
Hi, I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. I've spent an entire career helping women to share stories, nurture relationships, grow their brands, but most of all, to find their voices so they can make a difference. Do you feel stuck? Do you want to power up your own voice? Women Worldwide features the stories of passionate women who have navigated big career challenges and some of the toughest changes. These professionals offer deep insights and advice to inspire you and to help you uncover what's holding you back. Let Women Worldwide ignite your passion so you can excel in life.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Women Worldwide. Thank you so much for being here and for taking the time to tune in. With so many things going on in your life, we appreciate it. Now, I want to get right to today's episode because it focuses on navigating those life-altering transitions in our life. When you're dealing with the big stuff, whether it's heartbreak, grief, and the types of transitions that really knock you off your feet. I sat down with Christine Carlson, who is a survivor, a widow, a mother, a grandmother. She's a writer and a best-selling author. And you might know her because she is the author of the Don't Sweat the Small Stuff series. And Christine, in our discussion, shares about her journey through grief, how she made the choice to find joy and happiness, and gives some really good advice on how you can find your higher self when you're going through these types of transitions and how not to sweat the small stuff. I could go on and on about Christine, but I think it's time that she shares her journey and advice with you. Christine, welcome. Welcome to Women Worldwide.
Hi, so good to be here. Thank you for having me on.
It is my pleasure. So I've been wanting to share with you that your name, your husband's name has been in my house for the longest time because of this book right here. And it was actually my daughter, Megan, who is now 27. She read this in high school and gave it to me. And I've read it, of course. I think I've read it twice. But what I love and I want to share with everybody is how she underlined right in the book. And she had these little note cards and she made notes. So brilliant. Don't sweat the small stuff. Is that how you are best known?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think that for sure, I'm best known as the co-author of that book series with my late husband. Well, he was the one that really wrote that book that you just held up, Don't Sweat the Small Stuff. He had invited me to write with him in the series when we wrote Don't Sweat the Small Stuff in Love together. And then I wrote Don't Sweat the Small Stuff for Women was my first ever solo book. And then after he passed suddenly in 2006, a few years later, I wrote Don't Sweat the Small Stuff for Moms.
My goodness. Well, you have been on a journey. And there are no words for what you have experienced. But I did want to dive into, was that the impetus for you getting started and your desire to help women?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my journey as a self-help author and, you know, personal growth expert has been long. Beginning with my husband and our lives together. And then it has shifted and changed after his death. You know, I went through just a really deep grieving process, as everyone does. And in the midst of that process, I just remember feeling really grateful that I had so many tools, that I had done so much personal development work myself, and that I had all the tools that Richard and I had taught together for years. And yet it was still the most horrific experience of my life. And at times I wasn't sure, like everyone isn't sure, that I was going to get through it. And it was just, you know, so painful. I mean, to lose your life partner at 43, which totally happened unexpectedly. Yeah. Like, we were very young. He was only 45. I was 43. And for him to literally get on a plane and die on the airplane from a pulmonary embolism. Yeah, it was heartbreaking and shocking and traumatic. And, you know, and not just for me, but for my daughters who were 14 and 17 at the time. And that trauma today still impacts them. You know, it impacts me too, but in a different way. I think that as an adult, I had a lot of resilience that I didn't even know I had. And as teenagers, they're pretty resilient themselves, like just naturally, but it was much harder because they were so much younger. They didn't have the life experience that I had and the deep spiritual base that I had, you know, and they've grown into beautiful women today, but it's been a tough journey. I won't lie. It hasn't been easy.
to say the least. And there is no set path for grief. No. There isn't. And there's a lot of well-meaning people who share their thoughts and want to help, but it's just something, like I said before, I'm so sorry. There are no words. There's nothing that I could say or anyone can say to make you feel better.
And well, it's been 16 years, so I feel better. So I will just be clear about that. Like grief is not something that lasts forever. Grief is something that you go through. It's a time period. And what does last forever is that you miss the person in your life, but you get very used to living life without them. And that's just the truth, is that, you know, I love Richard today as much as I did when I met him, as much as I did when I had the opportunity to live with him for 25 years. But the truth is, I've had to decide and choose to live a life. And I want to live a life of joy. And I don't want to live a sad life. Nobody does. So, but the difference between me and a lot of people is I see that as a choice. At a certain point, your suffering becomes optional. And that is not in the beginning of grief. Nobody does not suffer when they are in grief. There is no human that that is attached to somebody, that loves somebody, that is not going to suffer grief when they're not here any longer. But the amount of time that people grieve is totally different, and how they go through grief is different. Now, that said, I do think that a lot of people need to be inspired through their grief, because we don't get an instruction manual. And we're also not taught very well in this culture to grieve. You know, we're taught to busy ourselves through grief. Like, just stay busy. You know, just stay busy. Get on with it. You know, get on with life.
Dealing with it.
No, you're not feeling it, and you're not allowing it. You're not allowing space for it to actually be there and to be present, because it is present. And for those people who feel like they can just shove it away and put it out, like put it off for another day, those people will be, you know, slammed with it at some point in their life. And our latent grief has a way of coming back at a time when it's triggered by some other grief, you know. And I'm just saying that grief doesn't go away. It just remains latent until you let it do its thing, which means you got to do the grief work. You have to cry. You've got to express yourself. You've got to get it out of you. You know, you got to empty it out. And then when that's done, it's not as if you're not ever sad. I'm always going to be sad that Richard died at 45, because quite frankly, we had an amazing life and a beautiful life, and we had more beauty to discover together in life. And that was cut short, but I'm very grateful for the life that we had together. And I'm also grateful that I've been able to step in and live a life of joy again.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And when you make the choice to be happy and to find joy, is that that moment that you don't sweat the small stuff? In other words, not that it Not that it should take a tragedy by any means for to find a certain path, but when does somebody, what would prevent somebody from not being able to move forward and to keep sweating the small stuff? Because especially if we're in the big stuff.
Well, it's interesting because I think, you know, one of the things that I think most people will agree on is when they are dealing with something really big, they aren't sweating the small stuff. I mean, they may get stuck, but that's not because they're sweating the small stuff. I think one of the things that's really obvious is that the things that bothered you the day before you go through trauma of any kind, and the kind of trauma where your life is in crisis, those small things that bothered you are not on your radar for maybe ever after that. So, but I think what gets people stuck is that we get stuck because we might feel like we're a victim of our circumstances, for example. We may not feel like we may be really stuck in our past and regret and not living very presently. And it's really hard when you're grieving to think about your future. You know, like you almost can't even see a future when you're in very deep grief, because it's just you it's too painful. It's just way too painful to think of a future without somebody that you love in it. And but then the other part of that is that people get stuck with regret of the past, things that they cannot change. When in fact, what we really need to do is ask ourselves, if we're in a situation where we cannot change it, then we have to surrender to what is. We have to surrender in a sense of not giving up and giving in, but surrender our will, surrender our minds and our spirits to understanding that this is a life that we have to step into very presently and very gently and very compassionately and self-compassionately. And when you allow, surrender means allowing yourself to feel your feelings about that. And you know, there's a lot of fear for people in grief about their future and fear in the, you know, fear going on in their minds. And really the only way to combat fear is just to be very present as much as possible. And
love that.
One of the great gifts of trauma, if you will, is that it kind of forces us to be immediately mindful. I mean, and mindfulness is in the present moment, and it kind of forces you to do that. And it's quite a practice. If you live a year in grief, you kind of get the practice of living a year in present moment living, which is one of the don't sweat the small stuff tenets, is present moment living, is live this moment, because this is the most precious moment you have.
And you might not have another moment. We're only in the moment.
I think,
are there some things that you can recommend to all those listeners out there, women worldwide viewers? How can they become more in the moment? You mentioned mindfulness. There's many different ways. What would you recommend to be more in the moment?
Well, of course, living in the present moment is really, truly a practice. Why? Because our minds are constantly taking us out of the present moment. And I mean, let's face it, our technology that we use today doesn't help us with that practice, because when you're looking at your phone, while you might be thinking you're being very present, you're not being very present. Mm-hmm. Being present means that you're engaged in literally like what you're doing in this moment. You're not looking at any other moment or any other thing or listening to any other thing or looking at any other thing. You know, when somebody's talking, you're really with them. Or when the breeze is blowing on your face, you feel that breeze. Or when you're outside, you see and feel everything around you. It becomes part of your internal world. Living in the present moment is a slower experience. It's much, much slower. I think that one of the things that we can all relate to, and maybe you can too, and maybe your listeners can too, is, have you ever been in a situation of danger, for example, where everything slowed down to slow motion? If you have, and you're saying, yeah, I can think of a time when I was almost in an accident, or I twisted my ankle and I watched my ankle twist, or I broke my arm and it was, you know, you can have that sense of everything slowed down. And the reason why it slowed down, because you got really present in that moment. You got really engaged, so engaged that you could feel time slow down. Well, that's a very big experience of the present moment, but it's a beautiful experience because it shows you how deeply that engagement can be. You know, one of the times when people are most engaged is while they're having sex.
Right. Of course. I would hope so.
They're not like hopefully looking at their phone. They're not like they're not looking around. You know, they're really into the act of what they're doing, the action, you know, and if we could bring that kind of engagement to every conversation we have.
Imagine.
I know, right? Not like we're all going to have sex with each other, but it's just that we're engaged. You know, we're deeply listening. We're deeply present. We're deeply there and here where we are now, you know? And so when you think about how you can do that, of course, you've heard many times, I'm sure, that meditation and yoga, mm-hmm. and all of those things are, if you do them correctly and gently and compassionately with yourself and practice them on an ongoing basis. I mean, practice almost every day.
Every day.
Not every day. You will start to discover this deep inner world that you experience, this deep inner world that's just you and engaged in your immersion into that breath, your immersion into the quiet, into the sometimes the busy thoughts. That's okay too, because sometimes our minds are very busy, but when we slow down, at least we notice that they're busy. That's you know, funny. Your mind is really busy all the time, but when you slow down, you can really sense and notice, wow, my mind is really a monkey right now, you know, really all over the place. And then you can start to breathe into that, quiet that down. You know, ask yourself to quiet down. You know, you sit down and say, hey, you know, can you just quiet down for just a few minutes and just, let's just experience peace. You know, me and me.
One.
Me and God, me and me and me and God, you know, whatever it is, you know, but just allow yourself that luxury, that time to tune inward. That is how you start to really deeply engage in the present moment. And also, it's not like a decision that you make when you wake up in the morning. It's a decision and a choice you make all day long. It's a decision and a choice you make when you notice you're not doing it, even in the car. You know, I mean, have you ever had that experience where you're driving and you're like, suddenly you've arrived and you're like, how did I get here? I'm like, wow, I wasn't even, how did I get here? I wasn't paying attention to anything, you know? So just those moments where you're not paying attention, you know, just bring yourself back to a center, a place in yourself of breath. It's always the breath is the easiest mm-hmm. thing. The other thing you can do is just place your hand on your heart and just sometimes that just is enough to bring yourself back into your body and into your breath and into the present moment.
You have such a calming effect, first of all. I read energy and you're so calm. I love the way you explain that. And there's two things that I would say. I think that I tend to just go by how I feel. And that's always my gauge. I have these really happy feelings, these lighter feelings. And the minute I have that, I know that I need to step back, breathe, and kind of do what you said. Take a moment, feel like one. And I do try to meditate every single day. And I can attest, everybody, it does help. But I think you do have to do it the right way, as you said, Christine. And also the other thing is you have to be alone. It's really important because, Christine, what you said about, oh, just get busy, get over it, get busy, go back to your day. No. Be alone and take stock in how you feel.
Yeah. And I just want to say too, yes, a lot of time spent on your own, but I don't like the idea of people isolating in grief.
Good point.
You know, like, and so I don't want you to get the idea that it's okay to just be alone in grief because you really do need a lot of support. And it's hard for people to ask. It was hard for me to ask. I just had a friend this morning say to me, gosh, I wish you'd ask for help more because it would make me feel a lot better as your friend. I would feel needed by you. I never feel needed by you. And, you know, and I thought, God, people have been saying that to me my whole life, you know, that they wished I needed them more. And I'm like, you know, and I'm like, well, I'm so fiercely independent and so fiercely emotionally sustainable on my own. Like, truly, I really am. I've always been that. It's probably one of the things my husband loved most about me was just this, like, kind of, I was so self-sustainable, which created a lot of great resilience. But then on the other side of that, I think that sometimes I could be a lot more vulnerable and say, gosh, you know, I really could use some support right now, you know? And what I don't want people to do is take that, because I did need a lot of support when I was in grief, and I had friends that were all around me and holding me. And if you don't have that, please look for some form of that helps you during this very difficult time, because it's very, very hard to go through that by yourself or feeling isolated. So, yeah.
I agree. Absolutely. We went through a family tragedy. We lost my stepdaughter, Noelle, when she was 24. Oh. And that, I think, was a point where even the most independent, everybody needed help and support. Just like you said, I agree 100%. There is a time and a place to be alone and find yourself, but the grieving process you don't want to do alone. Yeah. And therapy, whatever it takes, you take those steps or just have loved ones around. And I often wonder, as we move forward, as we find ourselves, did you have any aha moments? You've mentioned quite a few and ways that you set out on your path, but is there any aha or uh-oh moments that you might want to share that really struck you as, I'm moving forward in a big way, or I have to pay attention to something?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that the thing about like losing somebody, as you know, that you love, you know, there's a big missing piece of your life. And it's almost as if every time you come up against the edge of that missing piece, you feel the edge, literally, like the ground is going to fall out from under your feet. And so I think that, I mean, my advice for people would be to just really to take their lives very carefully and slowly, and, you know, not to make really huge decisions in the first year of loss, you know, not to just to try and just settle and ground and find your feet. Cause that's the hardest part, I think, is just, you feel so like you don't know where the ground is. And that's just a very anxiety ridden place to live. So I think that would be my biggest thing, is just don't make any huge decisions right away. If you can help it, and, you know, and really live life according to what it is you need, and don't worry so much about taking care of anyone that isn't immediately in your care. You know, for me, I had my daughters and I was mostly concerned about them, and I was, you know, third on my list, and they were high priority for me to make sure that they had what they needed. And then I was the third priority, you know, so everyone else was way down on my list. And I just made that real decision that if you added to my experience and helped me, then I would spend time with you. And if you didn't, that for that time period, I did not have the strength nor the wherewithal or the bandwidth to be with certain people during that time. And I returned to them, you know, when I healed and when I got my strength back. But it was interesting because I had some great friends that were great friends, and I didn't really want to talk to them much when I was in grief. Sure. So, but then I had other friends that maybe weren't my best friends when I went into grief and were my best friends coming out of grief. So, and just be ready, you know, for anything, you know, like your life has changed, you know, when you go through a huge, any kind of crisis. It doesn't even have to be the loss of somebody. It could be the loss of your job, or it could be the loss of your health, like learning, you know, you're walking along one day and you think you're healthy, and then you go in and you get your mammogram and you get your mammogram back, and the next day they tell you, you know, you've got breast cancer or something. You know, that happens a lot to people. Mm-hmm. They don't know that they're unhealthy, and then suddenly they have to deal with the whole identity crisis of that. And we don't often think of that, that causes an identity crisis, but for many people it does. And, you know, when you're in that space, you need to think in terms of what kind of, how are you going to be supported? How are you going to heal? What do you need to heal? Because we are like wounded animals in that place, and we have to heal. We have our inner work to do. And it's substantial. And I think that's why I love working with women so much that have gone through a huge change and transition, because they're ready. They know they're stuck. They know they want to step into their lives. They know there's something more, but they're not sure how to do it or how they step forward. And I love, you know, I love that part of being that guide for people on how to step in back into their lives.
Oh, I think that's wonderful that you're doing. Yeah. Because there's so many women who are just at that point, and they need the help to find the path and the vibrance of their life. And that's great. I haven't read your book, The One for Women, but I'm going to pick up a copy of that. So I'm excited to do that. And I hope that everybody picks up It's Don't Sweat the Small Stuff for Women. What's your latest book, Christine? So everybody can hear.
Yeah. So I republished a book called Heartbroken Open. It's a memoir, and it's coming alive again after profound loss. And that became a biopic Lifetime movie. I didn't know that. Yeah, it's called Don't Sweat the Small Stuff, the Christine Carlson story. So
congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, and it's out. You can, you know, search it. It's on different platforms now, and you can find it on Lifetime forever. And then my latest book after that is From Heartbreak to Wholeness, The Hero's Journey to Joy. Yeah. And those are, you know, really special books for me, because I wrote them so fully from my own heart. And, I feel like they're kind of my life's work in those books.
Well, I hope everybody picks up copies. You've been quite busy.
Oh, I know. Boy, I have. I mean, I did take a lot of time. I didn't do much the first 2 years of grief, but I was definitely one of those people that, you know, for me, Richard said something to me 3 months before he died, and it just really stuck with me. There's a couple things he said before he died. He said that he just kind of looked at me and said, "Chris, you know what so inspires me?" And I said, "What?" He goes, "Well, I love that there's people in this world that take their greatest tragedy and allow it to move them forward in life so that their life has greater meaning than it might have otherwise had." And I thought about that so much. Yeah, I know. I thought about that so much. I was just like feeling like he was really intuiting something about to change in our world. And he was, you know, giving me that instruction, and I took it that way. And then he often said, the circumstances of life don't make or break you, but they reveal you. And that really came back to me as an instruction as well. And I took those things, those deep things that he said in many of our conversations, to heart, and really, wanted to live a life that was also in honor of the life that we had, and in honor of him, and in honor of the great work that he brought to the world. And I knew that if I crumbled and I fell down and I didn't get up, that wouldn't honor him. And I also felt him really pushing me to live. Like I knew that this came as a surprise to him. And I knew in my heart that he wanted to be with us. He couldn't be, but he wanted to be. And I could feel him around me all the time. And I still do. And
I was just going to ask you that.
I feel him around me all the time. And I talk to him, you know, I talk to him, and, you know, sometimes I'm mad at him, like, why'd you leave? You know, you know, and, but most of the time I'm just talking very lovingly to him and, you know, feeling just tremendous gratitude for having had such a great love.
Gratitude. Oh, I'm so glad you said that. Yeah. Well, Christine, you have shared so much. Maybe just one piece of parting advice to wrap it all up for the Women Worldwide audience.
Yeah, so I would just say, you know, what is most important to you? And I think what's most important to all of us is to know what's in our hearts, what's true for us, and then to honor that with our lives and honor that with our actions. And I hope that listening to this today, my hope is that if anyone in your audience is grieving or has grieved a great loss, I hope that this inspires you to live and to just step into your life in baby steps. You don't have to do big things or step in big. Just step forward. That's the most important thing is to accept what's happened in a way that will help you live, you know, a great life still.
Well, that's excellent advice. Thank you so much. And just let everybody else know where they can find you, where you are, whether it's social media or your website.
Yeah, thank you. You can find me on most of the social media platforms, Christine Carlson, K-R-I-S-T-I-N-E, Carlson with a C, and then at ChristineCarlson.com or don'tsweat.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing your journey and all of the advice. Wonderful chatting with you. Thank you so much. Oh, it's such a pleasure. And to all of you, thank you for tuning in to Women Worldwide. As I always say, keep the conversations going and the feedback coming. And if you want to reach out to me, I'm on Twitter. I'm at Dee Breckenridge. And you know you can connect with me on LinkedIn. Thanks, everybody. And until the next episode, stay energized and focused.